Hey everybody, Chris Fafalius here. If you enjoy One Hit Thunder, which I'm assuming you do considering you're listening to it right now, I want to tell you about another great music podcast on the Evergreen Podcast Network. It's called Riffs on Riffs. On this season of Riffs on Riffs, hosts Toby Braswell and Joe Watson are breaking down one iconic pop song each week. Everything from Taylor Swift's Cruel Summer to Journey's Don't Stop Believin' to Naughty by Nature's OPP. Each week, they crack open the song, trace its history, decode those cryptic lyrics, and unearth the hidden gems in its musical DNA. Not only do they dive into the song's history, lyrics, and impact, they also go down some fun and oftentimes hilarious rabbit holes. So yeah, if you're a fan of One Hit Thunder, I think you'll also enjoy Riffs on Riffs. So go hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hanging around downtown by myself, and I had so much time to sit down and think about.
Marcy Playground's Sex and Candy was a bona fide hit in 1997, spending an impressive 15 weeks at number one on the Billboard Modern Rock Songs chart. Unfortunately, they were unable to come anywhere near the success of the song again. If you ask guitarist and vocalist John Wozniak, however, it was never his intention to write hit songs in the first place. This week, we play a game of dodgeball out on the Marcy Playground, as one of us is a fan and the other is not. Who thinks the band is Disco Superfly, and who is casting devious stares in their direction? Stay tuned to find out.
Yeah, mama, this surely is a dream. Dig it.
One hit is all you need to make the money guaranteed, and you can live off royalties forever.
And it makes me wonder, is it just a wonder, or is it one hit thunder?
All right, Matt, so you're making me do a Marcy Playground episode.
Yeah, I mean,
this is your
look.
Choice.
In all honesty, we've been talking about the like snooze you lose aspect of like we're nearing 200 episodes. The idea that some of these songs have not even been picked by anybody in the like over we've had, I feel like we've had to have had 100 unique guests on this show or close to it at this point.
Sure.
So the fact that I've sent this long list to people and no one's gone for this song is kind of crazy, because it is. This is like A, undeniably a one-hit wonder, and B, undeniably a massive hit at the time that it came out. So like the fact that this has been kind of looked over is a little crazy. Secondly, and this is a slight hint for people to go over to the Patreon page, your boy dropped about $60 at a used CD store recently, and the Marcy Playground album was one of the things that I picked up. So if you go to the Patreon page, this is going to come out on Wednesday. By Friday, we'll be releasing me telling Chris all of the garbage that I spent my $60 on at this used CD store. But I've always kind of liked this song and the follow-up single, St. Joe on the School Bus, I think is the full. It's a weird title. But I always liked the band, never dove into the rest of their stuff. I bought the record, and Sunday I was listening to the record while I was driving around, and I was like, you know what? I want to talk about this, because I've decided I am a Marcy Playground fan is the angle that I'm coming from. And I am very aware that you have on a couple occasions mentioned that Sex and Candy is one of your least favorite modern rock hits of all time.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. It's just the song, his vocal delivery. I don't know. There's something about like his lazy vocal delivery in this song, and just hearing this voice sing the word sex, that I'm like, ugh, I just don't want to hear this. I don't know what mood I have to be in to enjoy this song. I guess the do 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 do
That's kind of cool as far as a melody. But other than that, this song does nothing for me.
See, and I think in retrospect, looking back, what this song does for me is it's like this perfect blend of two genres I love, right? Because I love, talked about how much I love post-grunge. I love that like 1995 and beyond, like weird, will sign any band for the hopes that it could be the next Nirvana vibe. But also I love like late 90s indie rock. Like I adore stuff like Belle and Sebastian and Neutral Milk Hotel and like those kind of very soft-spoken, folky indie rock groups. And Marcy Playground seems like this perfect blend of both of those genres.
I don't hear it at all. I love Nirvana. Hey, I love Belle and Sebastian. You think Kurt would like this band?
I don't know if Kurt would like this band. I saw that one person said it feels like a song that could have maybe been on like the Unplugged in New York version of Nirvana. I would say that this feels like, to me, Bush mixed with Neutral Milk Hotel. But I there's something about the vibe. I don't know. But we're going to dive into it because this song, I forgot how big this song was. 15 weeks as the number one song on the modern rock charts. That is fucking crazy. That is a long time to be the number one song in America or in rock.
Sure. In modern rock, I have no idea what it was above on those modern rock charts. What was it competing with on the modern rock charts at the time? I don't know.
I can give you my best guess, right? Okay. Because the song peaked at number 8 on the Billboard Hot 100. So I wanted to see what was the next modern rock song on the Billboard Hot 100. And on the Hot 100, if this was at 8, the next closest thing to like an alternative rock song was at 18. And it was The Verve's Bittersweet Symphony. Okay. So we're in that same ballpark. And then I think I saw like a Third Eye Blind song on the Hot 100 as well. So like we're definitely getting into the more soft rock power pop era of like modern rock, kind of more chilled out music. But like let's go back to the beginning. So the name of the band, it's basically this whole band at the end of the day is just the one dude.
I gotta go back pretty far even before the band. Okay. Do you know this guy's story? John Wozniak? Do you know his deal?
So let's talk about John Wozniak, because I know the band's name is from the grade school that he went to, and a lot of the songs he say are pulled from childhood memories, which is why he wanted to do that. I know his dad was a professor at Bryn Mawr College, which is like not far from me. Mm-hmm. But that was really the only stuff that I pulled up in the research. So you tell me more about John.
So John, yes, he went to a school called Marcy Open Grade School, which was an experimental hippie school. And for some reason, these kids at this hippie school, they weren't too hippie-like because apparently they bullied John Wozniak every time he went to the playground. So he ended up at recess just hanging out inside the classroom and not going out to the playground. I believe that's where the Marcy Playground, obviously, that's where the Marcy Playground name came from. And a lot of his lyrics ended up coming from these experiences in school. Something, skip ahead now. So he's bullied at this hippie school, apparently. And this is so strange. And it really makes me think, there's parts of the story where I'm like, what? How is this dude Forrest Gumping his way through life? And the only way that I can, the only thing I can guess is freaking privilege, is how this dude just skips along through life. But apparently, starting at the age of 14, he followed the Grateful Dead for 6 years. And to support this following of the Dead, he sold LSD and, I do actually like this about him, hard-boiled eggs. Now, I don't understand how selling hard-boiled eggs is a thing. I mean, I guess if you have a cooler. As much as I love eggs, I'm not buying hard-boiled eggs, not even from the lead singer of Marcy Playground.
So but, let me tell you, so you just unlocked a memory. So when I was in high school, my science teacher got pregnant and left on maternity leave. So we had this replacement teacher, and I can't even remember his name, but he was one of the strangest human beings to ever be a teacher. And he would like, I remember this kid one time was like, hey, there's these weird pockets in the lips of my shoes. And the teacher, without missing a beat, is like, well, that's where you're supposed to stash your weed. And I was like, wow. And then he talked about how when he finished college, he followed the Grateful Dead for like 3 years. And he's like, I survived off selling grilled cheese sandwiches for $1. And he's like, I can't say what my slogan was in the school, but if you're creative and know how rhyming works, I'll say that it said, what the blank, it's only a buck.
I thought it was going to be way more clever than that. I thought it was going to be, if you're dropping the LSDs, then you need these cheese. Something like that.
No, nothing that creative. Okay. But I was just like, I guess theoretically, if there's enough people going to every Grateful Dead concert and you're just like keeping your production low on just buying some cheese and bread and doing a good job making a shit ton of grilled cheese sandwiches, you could probably fund following the Dead for a year or two.
Sure. Okay. Well, I will say that, you know, it sounds fun. I don't know if I'm ashamed to say, I guess I'm not ashamed to say this. I've never dropped acid. I've never done LSD. Can you believe that? Don't I seem like a guy who would have tried it at least once?
At least once, because you're kind of, I mean, not to like air too much of your shit, but you've really moved away from weed into like more psychedelics in your,
well,
in
not
your age.
Really.
Well, I like don't... the more psychedelics than I've taken.
Well,
which is,
yeah, I can't smoke weed. It makes me paranoid and anxious. I do like mushrooms. They come from the earth. I've only done them a handful of times in my life, but always had a great time.
Yeah, if you told me that you had done LSD once or twice, though, I'd be like, of course. Like, that's not shocking to me.
I've never even been around it. I've never even been offered it. No one I know has been like, hey, you want some of this? I mean, I don't know. I feel like maybe it's too late. I don't know if it's too late, but
I don't think it's ever too late to try anything, but you would definitely want
to
try it in a
are you
supervised
talking me into it,
situation. Look, man, like, we're almost at the point where that's like a legalized, guided, like, trauma scenario that you can do now. So
true. But anyway, John Wozniak apparently dropped acid over 100 times during his following of the Dead. And he loved it, but he had to stop because he felt like it was messing up his brain chemistry. Which, yes, I can imagine. I remember when I was a kid, like when they were trying to scare you off of all drugs. Which, yes, there's some drugs you should not do. But yeah. when they were trying to scare you off of all of them, I always heard, like, if you do LSD 7 times, you're legally insane. I don't know why that number 7 was, if you do it, like, you do it 6 and you're good. 7, you're legally insane forever.
My favorite trying to scare kids away from all drugs will always be the cartoon All-Stars to the Rescue special that George and Barbara Bush produced. Do you remember this special?
Faintly, yeah.
Like, it's like a kid steals his sister's piggy bank to buy some weed, and then, like, the Muppet Babies and Garfield and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and, like, every Saturday morning cartoon character comes out to show him the dangers of using drugs.
Right.
it's so classically mismanaged and poorly done. It's great. You can watch it on YouTube. It's phenomenal.
I love all the people that were very clearly on drugs doing the anti-drug commercials in like the 80s. Corey Haim. There's another one. Someone just
Pee-wee with the crack is always one of my favorites. I don't think that Pee-wee was doing crack, but like the commercial where Pee-wee's just like holding up the crack and he's like, this is crack. Don't smoke it.
Wow. I would listen to Pee-wee. Now, when I was in school, we had DARE. Did you have the DARE program?
Not so. We definitely had DARE. I don't think you've seen the shirt that I bought. I bought a new Weird Al shirt that's the DARE logo, and then it just says "To be stupid."
Wow, that's pretty good. I can't believe I didn't think of that. That's pretty good. But the DARE program is so funny because they'd have cops come in. Like, what is more going to make you want to do drugs than a cop telling you not to? Like, that's what is there? Are kids like looking up to cops? Fuck no.
No.
It's that Pee-wee. On the other hand, I'd probably listen to Pee-wee. I'd listen to Mr. T. You know, but a cop, a random cop? No thanks.
That's why we never forgot like the Rachel Lee Cook telling us about our brain on drugs. It's right. All right, Rachel Lee Cook, I don't want to upset you.
Yes, she was very upset, and I would. I would listen to Rachel Lee Cook.
Hey there, I am Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.
By now, I'm sure you've at least heard about Factor, but if you haven't tried it yet, let me tell you as a guy who loves it, now is the time. Enjoy stress-free dining this spring with Factor's chef-crafted, dietitian-approved meals that are ready in just 2 minutes. With 35 weekly options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie, plus over 60 add-ons, you'll stay fueled and feel fantastic all day long. Don't wait. Fuel up for your spring goals today with Factor. Factor offers you chef-prepared meals ready in just 2 minutes so you can spend more time doing what you love this spring. Indulge in gourmet options like filet mignon, shrimp, and fresh veggies without the hassle of prep or cleanup. Customize your weekly meals to fit your schedule perfectly and enjoy the convenience of Factor's no-fuss, no-mess approach. Plus, you can celebrate Earth Day all month long with Factor's low-carbon footprint options. Factor is your go-to solution for fast, premium meals, eliminating the need for cooking and empowering you to savor every moment. So head to factormeals.com/onehit50 and use the code 150 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code 150, the words one hit and the number 50, at factormeals.com/onehit50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Meanwhile, in New Jersey.
So, Marissa, what talking points do you want to hit on in this week's episode?
Well, Jackie, let's talk about how the film addresses the patriarchy. Ooh, and representation of marginalized people. Ooh, and even philosophical ramifications of good versus evil in horror.
We can point out the triangle boobs, talk about the blood splatter, and the practical effects. And also the male gaze?
My gaze at the males.
Hi-yo! From feminism to fangirling, the Jersey Ghouls cover all the bases of horror from a woman's perspective.
New episodes are uploaded every other Sunday.
Just search Jersey Ghouls to find us on social media and your favorite podcasting app.
But anyway, John, back to John Wozniak and Marcy Playground. So apparently he followed the Grateful Dead around for 6 years. I don't know if it's 6 years straight. That seems like a lot. That's like somewhere in 1800 or no, 2000 day.
Well, you said he was 14, right? So he'd be done at 20.
Yeah. I mean, but then this is where I get back to, like, now I don't want to get us in a Lucas with the lid off situation where we're accusing someone of privilege, but this guy's dad was
a professor at Bryn Mawr University.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But then the next thing I know about John Wozniak is he's attending Evergreen College in Olympia, Washington, and he's playing music in the same rehearsal space as Nirvana used to. So all of a sudden, this guy went from selling hard-boiled eggs at Grateful Dead shows to going to college in Washington all the way across the country. How did he get accepted? I've never heard of this college. Maybe there's something to it.
Well, to be fair, I think he was Minnesota originally. So Washington is close to his home, which is crazy because Bryn Mawr, as we know, is in Pennsylvania.
It's not close.
You think Minnesota's closer than PA to Washington?
It's still not close. I guess at some point, John Wozniak wrote his first album while he was in college, and it was called Zog Bog Bean. He made this in 1990 with the help of his girlfriend in his bedroom. Okay. And I guess he was sending this album out to people. And one of the people he sent it to was the head of A&R for EMI, Don something, who then this Don guy tells him, drop out of college, come to New York and form a band. And John's like, okay. So he does that. And once again, I don't understand. This dude has all this money to just do this stuff. Like, okay, I'll just quit college. You know, I guess I have money to just move to New York and maybe do something with my band.
Say how much he was charging for hard-boiled eggs in LSD.
I mean, it just feels like this dude was born sliding into home plate, you know?
Yeah, but I can't imagine, like, being as close to Bryn Mawr College as I am. Like, it's the main line for sure. It's a pricier area of Pennsylvania, but we're not talking about like the most prestigious college on the East Coast by any stretch of the imagination. I don't know. I mean, you could be right. I don't know. I feel like if you're like, oh, his dad's a professor and that's how he affords everything, I'm expecting Harvard or Yale or like some like big Ivy League school, okay, which Bryn Mawr College is definitely not.
All right. I'm not going to make any assumptions. Maybe it was that he was just like, this is what I want to do with my life. Found a way to move to New York, stayed with five roommates, ate peanut butter and jelly and hard-boiled eggs for a year. I don't know. Maybe that's the case. It just seems
because
I
still love the hustle. I love the hustle that it's like, I want to do music. The fact that first album, he self-produced it. He recorded pretty much all of it in his bedroom, just him and his girlfriend and his girlfriend's brother, who he then wrote a song named after his girlfriend at the time on the main album that we have, Sherry Fraser. But yeah, eventually Marcy's Playground is formed. I keep throwing an apostrophe S on there.
Marcy's Playground.
It's her playground. Yes. They record an album. They actually, from what I read, him and the group that he assembled recorded two full albums worth of demos that they sent to record labels. And that's what captured Capitol Records.
Back up. Okay. You're missing some parts of this story. One of the things is when he went to New York, he formed a band. He met up with an old classmate of his, John Cotler, who he formed the band with. They got signed to EMI, and then EMI released the album. And during that time they were on EMI, they only got radio airplay in Fargo, North Dakota. That was it. That's the only place that played them. And then EMI folded. Now, fortunately for Marcy Playground, some people from EMI continued to help the band because they believed in the band. And then 5 months later, they signed to Capitol, and Capitol re-released the album. 15 stations added Sex and Candy, and then it snowballed, leading to eventually a record 15 weeks at number one on the Billboard Modern Rock Tracks chart, which is pretty crazy.
I want to talk about my favorite quote in a while, which is, when asked what the song was about, John said in 2015, it means so many different things and so many different parts came from so many different places. It's just about seeing some sexy girl and then falling in love and then asking a dumb question to yourself. Well, it's not even asking a question. You know what? I'm just going to be straight up honest. I don't know. When I was writing these songs, I wasn't high, but it sounds like I was high.
It sounds like he pulled a Michael Scott where he just started talking and then it was just like, I don't know where I was going. I read
the pause followed by the like, look, I'm going to be straight up with you guys. I don't know.
Right. Well, he claimed that inspiration for the song came from when he was getting intimate with his girlfriend in her dorm room at Bryn Mawr, where his dad taught, and her roommate walked in on him and she said, oh, it smells like sex and candy in here. And that happened in the late 80s. And then he wrote the song in 92 and it didn't come out or whatever.
Until 98,
97, I guess. And he said that line or whatever had been in his head since the late 80s. And yeah, he had no idea what the song was actually about. Probably just some words that sounded cool.
Well, it's a lot of, I think that's why I've always liked the song, is that it's so strange. It's such an abstract song because it's like, it's pulling like it's pulling hippie lingo in. It's pulling like a lot of disco references into the lyrics. Like it's, I don't know what it is. This song I've always enjoyed. Like when this song comes on, I like it. I like it a lot. I like the monotone moodiness of the way that he sings, like hanging around downtown by myself. Like I get why people made the Nirvana comparisons, because don't think about Nirvana in the like lithium breed way, but like
Polly
something
wants
in the
a
way
cracker, or Polly wants
yeah
a cracker.
Like Polly and like Something in the Way like has that same kind of like mumbly monotone like disinterested vibe to it. But like I don't know, I just like stuff like Disco Lemonade. I'm like, I don't know what that means, but man, do I like how it sounds. Or like it's like Disco Superfly means fucking nothing. The song means nothing, but I'm almost charmed by it in so many ways. Did you read about the controversy with their second album cover?
Well, yeah, I did. Yeah, that was supposed to be a Butthole Surfers album cover. Then the Butthole Surfers left the label, and the label was like, here, do you want to use this artwork? And they were like, okay. And apparently, John Wozniak and Marcy Playground did not know that that was supposed to be the Butthole Surfers artwork, right?
Yeah, that like Paul Leary paid for. Like, he commissioned it and paid for the artwork. And apparently their butt, like, the fact that he's a fan of the Butthole Surfers is not shocking to me in the slightest. Like, that absolutely makes sense. When you listen to Marcy Playground, it's like, yeah, I it's not noise rock for sure, but it's definitely that same, you can tell that it's pulling from a lot of the same influence bucket of like a real love for psychedelic weird music. Mm-hmm. And Sex and Candy doesn't really like it does capture the album. I'm not sure how much of the album you listen to beyond it, but it's like
I listened to the singles all the way through, which that St. Yeah. Joe on the School Bus song, the music video is pretty interesting. Did you happen to watch the music video?
I remember the music video from MTV. Like I really liked that song when it came out.
Yeah, I mean he's a veterinarian and he's giving a dog a colonoscopy, and you get he like shows like that inner camera, like the beginning of Uncut Gems. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
But then he keeps going, and then there's a kid in there, the kid that got eaten in the video. I was like, wow, this is a lot. That Sherry Fraser song, slow, folky. I would never intentionally listen to that song. There was nothing appealing about that song to me.
I was shocked that that was a single. Like, Poppies made sense. St. Joe made sense. When I saw that Sherry Fraser was one of the singles, I was kind of thrown back. The closing track, I think, would have been a great single, The Vampires of New York. It's probably one of the more like upbeat poppy songs on the record, but this is my shit though. Like this album was so my jam, and now I want to check out more of their music. Especially I want to see the Shapeshifter. I want to dive into Shapeshifter next.
Shapeshifter, the single from it called It's Saturday. I thought that was the best Marcy Playground song I heard.
All right.
And I still didn't really love it, but I was like, okay, this is better than everything else that I heard by them. Somewhere in between there, man, between the first album and Shapeshifter, Wozniak sold his publishing for $1 million, and Marcy Playground got $750,000 budget to record the next album. Dude, I don't even know what you would do with $750,000 to record an album. It doesn't even make sense. Like, where is that money going? I could see maybe on the promotion after it, but the way I read it is it was for the recording of it.
Yeah.
I don't understand what you're doing that you need to. I feel like you could record 10 albums a year for the rest of your life for $750,000.
Well,
and it would sound great.
I'm not sure if you listened to the episode of Christmas 365 that we did on Invader Zim. But I talk
about what that is.
It was a cartoon from Nickelodeon. But
okay.
We talk about mindless self-indulgence a little bit in there. And I talk about one of the biggest pet peeves in my life was that Mindless Self-Indulgence and Five Iron Frenzy both were running a Kickstarter campaign at the exact same time. And it drove me nuts because Five Iron Frenzy, which is like an 8-piece ska band that lives in 4 different states, was looking for $20,000. to record a full-length album, and Mindless Self-Indulgence, which is essentially a one-man project that he records in his bedroom, was looking for $150,000 to record an album. And I'm like, I don't even understand what he needs $150,000 for that an 8-piece ska band needs like a tenth of that.
Dude, honestly, and I've had this sort of budgets before for albums in the past, but $15,000 to $20,000 budget to get the right producer and do it in a good studio. I mean, I guess if you want to go to like some fancy ass studio, but dude, you can make an album that sounds just as good as anything out there for $20,000. If you're working with the right people and you're good, like, you
got to bring something to the table.
if you're just dependent on someone creating the whole thing for you, you might need more money than that. But I can't imagine in the year 2023 needing more than 20 grand for an album. I mean, maybe 30, but any more than that is just ridiculous, I think. Yeah, but dude, it's so funny. So they released the Shapeshifter album. I don't know how much it ended up costing to record, but when I listened to that It's Saturday song, which I think is pretty all right. I can't imagine that, you know, let's figure they have a $750,000 budget and there's 10 songs on it. That
$70,000 a song.
$75,000 to record. I don't get that. But I don't know how much they actually ended up spending on the recording. But it's all right. But I think part of the problem was, did you see when they chose to release the album?
No, I missed that. Okay. What was...
So Shapeshifter came out on November 2nd, 1999. The following albums were also released on November 2nd, 1999. Rage Against the Machine, The Battle of Los Angeles, Mariah Carey, Rainbow, Counting Crows, This Desert Life, Foo Fighters, There's Nothing Left to Lose, and one for, I don't know if this was really competing with it, but I think this is pretty cool. It came out that day. Saves the Day Through Being Cool came out that day. Also around that time, Alanis Morissette, Unplugged, Fiona Apple, When the Pawn. There were albums from the Beastie Boys, Third Eye Blind, Metallica, Dave Matthews Band. They really got swallowed up by all these huge artists releasing albums at the same time. They didn't do very good planning on the release of their next album. John Wozniak claims that the band had no intention of trying to be commercially viable, and the label, well, he said that the label was more interested at that time, which is probably true, that they were more interested in finding the next Britney Spears or NSYNC, which makes sense. 1999.
I might have some answer to the $700,000 question that we have here.
The $700,000 question. Let's hear it.
It says that the album was produced by frontman John Wozniak.
Okay.
Shapeshifter was recorded at Mushroom Studios in Vancouver.
His own Wozniak studio.
Wozniak purchased and fully renovated the studio. So I wonder if it was money to literally buy and build the studio that he wanted to record it.
Well, that's a good use of that money, at least. Yeah. Like, that's a smart move, at least, because then that money can just make
continue
you
to funnel the rest of the bit. Yeah, you just.
Yeah.
But like, here's the thing I didn't research, and I probably should have. Like, is John Wozniak one of those? Let me see, other collaborations. Not much. Like I was like, was he another one of the dude? Like, was he one of those one hit wonders that like became an established producer after the fact? And it doesn't really seem like it.
Yeah. Might just own a studio and bands come pay to record there, which is fine.
Yeah.
Hey, at some point, Kotler, who produced some of these songs, along with Sex and Candy, was actually co-produced by Kenny Gioia, who I recorded with.
Oh.
Yeah. Kenny was one. Kenny and Shep were the two guys that recorded 37 Everywhere. So we always knew that we had a tie to Marcy Playground, Sex and Candy, one way or another. But Kotler was one of the dudes that produced that song and album, I guess, too. But he left the band after the self-titled album and sued the group over their financial arrangement. Not good. And yeah, man, also, I guess Sex and Candy was used in lots of shows and movies and video games and everything. And supposedly, now it's John Wozniak, I believe, who said this, but he said no to both M&M's and Coca-Cola. And I'm confused about how M&M's and Coca-Cola would be able to use a song called Sex and Candy. Like, unless they changed the sex part. Like, M&M's, yeah, it's candy. I don't know how they would have used the song to promote their product.
That is a wild, yeah, that's wild. I did see that the song appeared in, like, you know, Zach and Mary Make a Porno. Totally makes sense. It was also in, like, an episode of True Blood. I want to talk about the Billboard chart real quick when this song peaked, because this kind of blew my mind in just, like, if we want to set the mood, right? So the song debuted April 11th, and literally the next week, April 18th, it hit its peak position of number 8 on the Hot 100.
Okay.
This was, of this top 10, Chris, this was one high school slow dance era of music.
Okay.
So I would have been
in high school, probably not at the dance, not slow dancing, but wishing I was, I'm sure.
So I would say that these songs are slow dance songs.
Okay.
songs I've never heard in my entire life.
Okay.
Marcy Playground and one other song.
Okay.
So,
let's go.
So we got number 10, Celine Dion, My Heart Will Go On.
Would you slow dance to that one? I guess.
Yeah.
Sure.
Number 9, Wyclef Jean, Gone Till November.
Okay.
Not a slow dance song. That number 8, Marcy Playground. Number 6 or number 7, Usher, Nice and Slow.
Right. Okay.
I mean, it's right in there. That's a slow dance song. No clue what this song is. It's Silk E. Fine featuring Chill, Romeo and Juliet.
I don't remember that one.
Nope. Number 5, Savage Garden, Truly, Madly, Deeply.
Okay.
Absolute slow dance. Number 4, Madonna, Frozen. Barely remember this song. Maybe no. It was a slow dance.
I don't remember that one.
Number 3, a song all about slow dancing. In fact, slow dancing so hard that you get hard. Next is Too Close.
Wow. Okay.
Number 2, this has popped up a couple times for us, Chris. Montel Jordan's Let's Ride, which, like,
wow.
The sheer fact that Montel Jordan has a number 2 single that I have never heard in my life.
Yeah, dude, how do we not know this song?
It comes up way more often than you'd imagine. I feel like it's constantly in the top 5 when we're in the year 1998. And I'm like, I have no clue what this song is.
Well,
and then
can
number
you put
1.
A clip of that song, Matt? We need to hear this song.
I'll put a clip in.
Let's get right. Let's get out. No more tears,
and then number 1, I would say the ultimate high school slow dance song, Casey and JoJo's All My Life.
Oh yeah, that was my alarm in the morning for a couple of years. That woke me up in the morning.
Did you wake up to baby, 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 like the little so intro, or just right into the chorus?
Right into the chorus. All my life. Yep.
I would say that my dad and the other song that I always think of as a high school slow dance song is Brian McKnight's Back to One. The one, you're like a dream come true.
Two, I don't
just
want
to be with you. Three. Girl, it's plain to see that you're the only one for me. And four, repeat steps 1, 2, 3.
Oh, that's what step 4 is? Yeah. 1, 2, and 3? I like Brian McKnight's Christmas song a lot.
But all right, I'm feeling like we're about to walk into the thunder blunder stage of this, and I have a feeling that neither one of our positions has changed from the start of the recording of this episode.
Probably not. I mean, I will say that after that, Shapeshifter didn't really chart, and then the band was let out of their contract. I think they released another album. At some point, they did something where, I mean, this is pretty cool. They released an album at some point where they put out the tracks and people could remix them because they wanted to release a remix album, and anyone could remix it, and they picked the best ones, and then they shared the royalties with whoever did it. So you had a chance of getting your remix on the album and sharing in the royalties with the band. I think that's pretty cool. They did that like way later, and now they're often part of, like, you know, tours with other bands from the era, which no shame in that. I think that's cool. I just don't like the music, man. I got no problem. I know I kind of alluded to this dude maybe being a little bit of a whatever. What would we call that? A Nepo baby or something. But I don't know that that's true. For all I know, the dude was just eating his hard-boiled eggs and just wanted to make it music. So it would be unfair of me to claim that, because I don't have any proof of that. But I just, none of the music speaks to me. And it's taste. The Sex and Candy song, when it comes on, I'm just like, it just makes me go like, oh. You know, it doesn't. Yeah. It doesn't uplift me. It doesn't make me, it just puts me in like more of like, I want to change the channel kind of mood. That's it.
Gotcha. Now, and this is a song where if it's on, I want to listen to it till the very end inside my car. This is an album that I will absolutely be listening to over and over and over again. I want to go out and purchase a copy of Shapeshifter. I want to check out their later albums as well. So I am a full blown Marcy Playground fan after this, so I've got to go Thunder. I'm going to throw Thunder on the playground.
Yeah, I'm going to be one of the bullies on the playground, and I'm going to say this is a blunder, and I don't think I'm wrong. Like, they had the one hit, and it was just a blunder after. I mean, he had all that money to go record and, I mean, built a studio. That's cool. But, yeah, I don't know. No, didn't hear a single song that I would add to a playlist. So sorry, Marcy Playground. I'm sure you're cool people and you've had a lot of success in music, but in my eyes and ears, this one's a blunder.
Well, despite all that, Chris, I still think you're Disco Superfly.
The whole town disappeared.
This has been One Hit Thunder. One Hit Thunder is hosted by Chris Ophelios of the bands Punchline, Pack, and Another Cheetah, and produced by Matt Kelly of Geekscape.net. Underneath me, you're hearing The Reinventor off the Punchline album Delightfully Pleased. Be sure to check out Punchline.com for any upcoming news about the band. Our podcast is now on Patreon, so if you find us at patreon.com/OHTpodcast, be sure to subscribe and get early access to episodes, bonus episodes, and a chance to vote on future songs that we cover. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to us on any podcasting app, and tune in next week for more One Hit Thunder.
I'm living underground now. Super top secret plan.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise, to the stage, to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.